Hey, hey, it's Conrad Thompson, and you're listening to Arn. And of course, it's Thanksgiving week, and you know what that means. It's Starrcade season. Starrcade was the granddaddy of them all. It predates WrestleMania, and it's a tradition here on my little podcast network to cover either Survivor Series or Starrcade this week. And of course, today, we're going to talk about one of the more notorious Starrcades. A lot of people think this was the beginning of the end for Jim Crockett Promotions. You can hear a full watch-along episode later this week with our great friend, Mr. Jim Ross, the voice of wrestling, where we actually watch this whole show. But today, Arn and I are going to watch the Brainbusters, or what would become the Brainbusters. It's still the Four Horsemen. But for how much longer? Tully Blanchard and Arn Anderson will be defending their tag titles against the Road Warriors in Chicago, Illinois. I'm pretty excited about this one, Arn. This is a rather notorious Starrcade, to say the least, huh?
Yeah, I mean, everybody was revved up for this one. The Road Warriors, the fans, us, you name it. It seemed like everything was on a different level.
It's a weird time in the business, too, just to bring some context. This is 1987, so pay-per-view has just really become more of a thing. In years past, Starrcade was shown on closed circuits. You would go down to an arena, whether it was at the Superdome or the Omni or Charlotte or wherever, and you might see some local matches, but then there would be big jumbo screens where you could actually watch the action. Well, now pay-per-view is a thing, and the WWF is king. WrestleMania 3 broke every kind of record in the book, and around this same time, you started to hear all the chirping from up north about, oh, we're making so much money on our dolls. Of course, that's what the guys would call the LJN action figures. And supposedly it was major money. So how does Jim Crockett compete? Well, he makes a couple of acquisitions. He thinks he's in a bidding war to purchase Bill Watts territory. He picks that one up, but with it comes a lot of back debt and comes existing debt and a roster. And perhaps now we can build our own little network, the Wrestling Network. But what does that look like? And I think one of the selling points, Arn, and correct me if I'm wrong, is Dusty came with Jimmy and explained, okay, they have WrestleMania, but that's just their one pay-per-view. Stick with us, and we're going to have three or four or five of these things, and together we'll all make more money. And in response to that, a lot of guys stick around. But I think contracts like the Midnight Express or the Road Warriors, while they may have had big guaranteed money contracts, they're still being paid on the house, with the idea being there will be a giant lump sum at the end of the year. So it feels like Crockett has sort of hedged his bets and bet it all on this one show. And then disaster strikes. Vince McMahon decides, nope, we're going to go ahead and leverage a new pay-per-view that we're going to call Survivor Series, and we're going to create it just to mess with Starrcade, and we're going to go head-to-head, and we're going to tell all the pay-per-view providers, if you carry their show, you won't get WrestleMania 4, which you know is guaranteed money. So instead, carry my show, Survivor Series, and I'll get you WrestleMania. The result, an abysmal buy rate. And that meant there's going to be a lot of hurt feelings when the payoffs come in for this show, I would tend to believe. How much of that do I have right, Arn?
100%. I mean, when your boss comes to you and tells you things are going to be rosy and you're going to make money, and basically just volunteering that information without being asked, you kind of count on it, which, you know, might have been a mistake on our part.
Well, either way though, the Crocketts are in bad shape on the other side of this pay-per-view. And a lot of that is not necessarily because they don't have entertaining characters or compelling matchups, or they don't have the right venue. And we're going to talk about all that today, I'm sure. But a lot of it is Vince McMahon has tried to sabotage really the first ever Jim Crockett pay-per-view. Because at this point, not a lot of homes had pay-per-views. This is before you could just click a button on your remote and you've got it. No more instant gratification. You had to go down to the cable company. You had to get a little box or a thing to put on the back of your TV. It was much more of a process. And with most of those cable systems knowing that WrestleMania is the brand, they didn't want to risk the opportunity to lose WrestleMania 4. So they just didn't carry this. Around 20,000 people bought this pay-per-view, which is incredible when you think about it in hindsight, how few households that is. They still did really well in the Carolinas. And believe it or not, there were some spots out in California that carried the show, but nearly every other major cable system said, okay, we're just going to go ahead and take the sure thing. We'll carry Survivor Series and know that we're getting WrestleMania. Going into this though, this felt like hey, we got big stuff going, right, Arn? We've got new Dallas offices. We're not running it in Greensboro anymore. Now we're running it in Chicago, which in hindsight was probably a mistake. But Chicago is like, you have to appreciate the third largest city in the country, and it doesn't feel quote unquote Southern. And I'm sure that was something that somebody got in the Crockett's ear about. If you want to compete nationally, you can't just run Greensboro. Do I have that right?
Yeah. And you know, we had the guns to expand, to run all the major cities. You know, we do well when we run a house show in LA or San Francisco or, you know, Denver, any of those towns. You know, there was a process and there was a history of us doing well in those big cities. In Chicago, which has turned out to be one of the best, right to this day, one of the best wrestling cities in the country, if not the world. You know, it was probably a good choice at the time.
Chicago, in my opinion, is the wrestling city in the United States. And you could certainly make the argument globally. I haven't been to all those towns, so I don't know, but boy, that crowd in Chicago, they turn out, they're loud, and they turn out in droves, and you do a great job here. But it's worth mentioning, you're not running the show at the United Center. You're not running it at the old Rosemont Horizon. You're running it at the UIC Pavilion, which most people probably remember from the Flair Steamboat trilogy a couple years later in February of 1989. That was match one where Steamboat won. So it's a much smaller venue, and it's really a lot smaller than what they were used to, even in Greensboro. A lot of our listeners aren't familiar with Greensboro, Arn. It's the home of Starrcade, but it's also the home of the ACC tournament, and it holds a lot of seats, right?
Yeah, and there's so much history there. I mean, wrestling, you name it, basketball. In that arena, there has just been so many big matches over the last, I'd say, 50 years, that there's just an aura and a stigma and a home field advantage when you're in Greensboro.
It was a big deal. Of course, a lot of people speculate, oh, if they just would have kept Starrcade in Greensboro, it would still be going to this day. I don't know how much of that I believe, but I do know that the first Starrcade, it was turn away, man. I mean, traffic was stopped on the interstate. It was a turn away crowd. Thousands upon thousands couldn't get in the door, but that was 83, and the streak would continue. 84, 85, 86. They all had their own sort of theme. Of course, we know it was Flair for the Gold, and somewhere along the line in 86, it was Night of the Skywalkers. I think it was the $1 Million Challenge in 84. In 85, it was The Gathering. But in 87, it's Chi-Town Heat. And the other questionable maybe piece of booking, besides how the UWF talent had been positioned, Ron Garvin is the world champion. Ron Garvin had been obviously a tremendous performer, someone that people really believed. He was a very credible badass in a lot of different territories. But just a couple of years prior to this, he was in drag, and now he's the world champion. And I think a lot of people really struggled with, this guy's no match for Flair, which is probably unfair, because once the bell rang, Ron Garvin was a legit dude. But the creative, once upon a time, didn't exactly build a lot of confidence in the fans. Would you disagree with that, Arn?
Well, I don't know. I was there to see the Ronnie Garvin slugfest up close and personal. I was in a lot of them. I know that the audience totally believed in him 100%. You know, the fact that he had done the entertainment stuff earlier, I don't think kills him off, because, you know, wrestling fans are smart.
Yes.
And they know who a badass is, and they believe that Ronnie Garvin could beat anybody on any given night. And, I don't think that had a big bearing on the buy rate or anything else. Just my opinion.
Well, it's just interesting when you look back through sort of some of the more bona fide hits that Starrcade produced as a main event. You had Flair and Harley. Of course, you had Flair and Dusty a couple of times. But here we've got Flair and Ron Garvin, and it's a little different. We've got Flair chasing supposedly as a heel, but he's so loved in Chicago. I don't know that they quite pulled it off. Who else is loved in Chicago? Well, the Road Warriors. This is their quote unquote kayfabe hometown. It's a bit of a homecoming event here, and they're going to be challenging for the NWA World Tag Team titles. And that's what we're watching today. So fire up your WWE network. Go to Starrcade 1987. You'll click in ring, scroll down until you see WCW pay-per-views. Select the year there from the drop-down, 1987. And there will be Starrcade November 26th, 1987. You're going to go to the time code 1 hour, 15 minutes and 25 seconds. There's a tile at the bottom. If you're watching on your computer that says Road Warriors versus Arn Anderson / Tully Blanchard. So that's pretty easy. It's 1 hour, 15 minutes and 25 seconds. We're going to encourage you to let the ad play. They're probably still pushing the 30 days of the Undertaker thing, and you'll have to sit through that for 15 seconds. Go ahead and mute your speaker, and Arn and I will give you some alternate commentary on a pretty controversial tag title match here with the Road Warriors challenging for the tag straps. It's 1 hour, 15 minutes and 25 seconds. Arn, why don't you give us a countdown today? I'll let you say 3, 2, 1, play. And when you say play, we'll all press play.
Sounds like a winner. 3, 2, 1, play.
And there we see the pyro, or the smoke rather, and the cool entrance, the lights. This is not something that we saw in all the Jim Crockett shows, but Starrcade was the special show. It was the big show. And there they are. Mr. Heel himself. Oh, and look who it is. It's Double A. And in back, Johnny Bench. James J. Dillon. Here we go.
Can't explain the feeling I had that day. Everything had came into place. Road Warriors, hometown. Road Warriors were on fire. Tully and I had some steam behind us. It was like all the stars came into alignment on this particular night. And those Chicago fans might not have been the biggest arena in the city, but they were every bit as raucous and rabid as they could be.
We should mention the Road Warriors here. Not only is this their kayfabe hometown, but they were notorious for what's known as the Road Warrior Pop. They're going to get a hell of an ovation here. But they're not using their traditional Iron Man theme song. Because this is on pay-per-view and will later be on a video cassette, they played a different song, which probably hurt them a little bit. It's probably hard to describe, Arn. You were in the ring when they came out to it, but when the Road Warriors came out to Iron Man, it was next level stuff, was it not?
Everything got real. Look at those guys.
Yeah.
And hey, we got as big a rush here in that music as they did. Because you react off of the fans, period. Doesn't matter if they're reacting to you or your opponents.
Right.
Still, the reaction you're looking for is what you're shooting at anyway.
It's so fun to go back and look at stuff from this era. You see how primitive the graphics are, but you also see just around the ring, there is no guardrail. There is, but not really. Not the barricades we're used to now. There's no mats around the ring. I actually prefer this. I like when the crowd is a little darker and all the lights are on the ring. Do you prefer this old school look to the new, more polished look that we enjoy today?
Well, I love it. I love the cement. I love the look of the cement and what that represents. I like the smoky, little bit dark where the audience is concerned. And something people don't understand is when the audience are not lit up, when they're dark, they will tend to get more rowdy because they don't feel like everybody is looking at them.
Yep. That's a great call.
So that makes for a more, lively audience.
Look at those beautiful blue tag team straps. I wonder where those wound up.
Smart man must've got a hold of those. All I can figure.
Tully Blanchard, of course, and yourself. I looked up the other day. I can't believe this is real. You're like 29 years old here is all. Is that right?
Yes.
It's just hard to imagine. I just feel like you've been 43 your whole life. And so's JJ Dillon. JJ Dillon has looked 50 his whole life. I feel like he was born with glasses and a stogie.
Well, and today he looks exactly the same. That's what pisses me off. He really hasn't aged.
Oh, I've always wanted to ask this. When you're starting against the Road Warriors and they're coming in with all this adrenaline, they're pumped up. They're ready to go. Do you and Tully in the back play rock, paper, scissors to see who has to go first for the slaughter?
Nah, it's just whatever we feel right at the time. And we really don't make that decision until it happens, believe it or not.
Starting with Hawk here. If you had your preference and you had to work primarily with one or the other, would your preference have been to work with Hawk or Animal?
It depends on how many days Hawk had been up. God bless him. I love Mike Hegstrand, but he did nothing normal. Everything was to the extreme. And, you could just about tell when you slid in the ring and you looked at him and looked in his eyes how many days he had been up. So that was a definite barometer.
So if he'd been up for a week, maybe animal, but if he was well rested, would take Hawk?
Either or. I had no preference because they all, you know, if you watch their work, it's different. They work completely different. It's what was one of the keys to their success.
On a night like this, I should mention, you guys were not just coming in and hanging out for a week and getting ready for the big show. The night before, you ran a show in New York, and now you're here in Chicago. On a day like this, would you wake up in Chicago, or would you have tried to make the town in the jet the night before?
Oh, no. It was always get there the night before and get up and work out before you had to be at the arena. You know, that the routine never changed. You would always get, that was the whole benefit of having those private planes that got you in that night, instead of having to get up and, you know, 6 o'clock, take a 8 o'clock flight to fly to the town that morning. And you end up not sleeping at all. I don't know about you, but when I've got to wake up that early, I don't sleep at all.
Yeah, it's hard.
So you got actually ended up getting more rest, even getting in there late, and same routine pretty much.
Well, I know this sounds silly, but we get questions like this all the time on a show like this, because this is a Thanksgiving night tradition. Does Crockett have you guys some sort of like Thanksgiving lunch or dinner or whatever catered in the back, or is it still just fend for yourself, figure it out?
And I'm going to sound stupid here. I have some memory on this particular night, they had some form of catering, but as a rule, no, nothing at all. And to be honest with you, that was fine with me because I'm not one of those guys who can eat late.
Yeah.
Anyway. So, and I think most of the guys were that way. It was more of a coffee, Diet Coke / some kind of diet on the day of a big show. You didn't get up and eat breakfast, possibly, depending on what time you had to be at the arena, maybe a light lunch, but that was it. Nothing like it is today as far as them, you know, the catering and all that stuff.
Tommy Young is your referee here. Tommy is regarded as being one of, if not the very best referee the NWA ever had. Where would you rank him as far as referees you worked with?
Oh gosh, there's probably, like talent, there's probably five guys that you could put in that slot. Anyone would seem right. Tommy was very passionate about the business and he loved the business. And we inherited that every time he had, you know, had one of our matches. Plus, you know, if you go back and look at it, in those days, you didn't have three referees for a big show or four referees. You had one, maybe two. Had a second one for a backup. Tommy would work, you know, sometimes five matches in a night.
That's a lot of stamina, a lot of getting up, a lot of getting down. I mean, I know he doesn't have the physical bumps and bruises and crashes that you guys do, but running around, sweating your ass off, up, down, up, down, up, down. And an occasional, especially in this era, an occasional referee bump here or there. He earned his keep in this day.
You bet he did. And he was active. You watch him. He's active. He looks interested. He's following the match.
So on a match like this, a big time, you know, big show like that, would that have been a spot you guys have done 100 times and it was just instinct? Or
first time for that one, believe it or not. If you saw, I was quite the high flyer on that particular move for just a second, which was not part of my repertoire, which I learned exactly why shortly after my feet hit the mat. But that was one of those deals, just on the fly, go with me. You know, you tried to save some stuff that wasn't part of your repertoire for the big shows where they paid extra so that they got something extra. And it felt like a pay-per-view move. You know what I mean? Not that that was a pay-per-view move, but it was different from my style and what they were used to.
So when you guys go out here, this is before the referees have earpieces and things like that. What parameters would you have? Hey, we know the finish and we know about how long, and is there someone at ringside to give you some sort of cue as far as how much time you have left or anything like that?
Referee would keep us, in tune with how much time was left. And that would come from the timekeeper. You had to have an idea, you know, because you couldn't just run away with the time on a big show like this, because there were matches after yours, matches before yours that, you know, were timed out, you know, pretty close. So you couldn't just go take whatever time you wanted. Some matches were afforded a little more flexibility. I would think this one was one of those. This was one of the premier matches.
Oh yeah. Let me ask, in this day in 87, were you guys using separate locker rooms for good guys and bad guys? Or are you all sharing the same space by this point?
Oh no. Separate sides of the building. The entire time on Crockett, with Crockett, you had guys on separate sides of the building.
So how would finishes and whatnot be communicated through Tommy Young or some other referee via Dusty?
Yep. Referee.
Okay.
He would bring over, you know, something that was out of the ordinary, and because you just had all kind of people in those days walking around backstage. So you couldn't be back there, you know, sitting around and, you know, playing grab ass with your opponent that night, because word of mouth would have got out. And if it would have been social media in that era, in those days, oh my God, could have never done that.
Talk to me a little bit about the finish here. It's going to appear, this is a pretty controversial deal. I should mention, by the way, Meltzer gave this 3.5 stars. He says, I realize the problems inherent in letting the roadies have the belts. However, this was the right time to do it. 3.5 stars. The fans are going to be under the impression that the Road Warriors are your new tag champs and they're going to leave with the belts. But then of course it's going to be revealed on the broadcast and certainly later that it's been overturned. It is a quote unquote dusty finish. It was actually a DQ. And as a result, you guys retain. Did you know that before you got to the building, or do you discover all of that day of?
Day of. And that was pretty much the way it was with everything. You wouldn't hear anything. You know, everybody was such a pro back then, Conrad. They were experienced. You know, a lot, you look at the crew on Crockett's crew, there's some quality veterans that can just work on the fly. You give them one little bit of direction and that's all they need. And that type finish, it worked if it was in the sense that the audience member knew over the top was an immediate DQ. And that's the reason you didn't do very many of those finishes during the course of a couple of years, because you saved it for when it would apply. And that night, it just happened to work. It was a little confusing until they realized what had happened. But when the Road Warriors decide to take the belts, whether you won the match or not, and you go to the locker room with them, let me ask you, what are you going to do about it?
No, they're taking the belts. I mean, that's all there is to it.
Hopefully folks, the political process will right this wrong somewhere tomorrow or the next day. I'm not going to get killed again just because you're carrying the championships to the, your locker room illegally or not.
In hindsight, do you think this being, you know, their quote unquote hometown, that this was the right place and the right time to put the belts on them?
Well, the bigger question would be, I'll tell you how you'll know. When you look at the towns that followed the quote returns,
yep,
the live events, you'd have to check those figures to see, did the towns go up or did they go down? And without question, that will answer if you did the right thing or not. Because this was, yeah, the timing would have been right. It would have been a hell of a feel-good moment for those guys to became champions, had their moment in the ring in their hometown. You know, obviously, it doesn't get any more feel-good than that. But if it, you know, once you beat, like the Road Warriors, once you make them the champions, then what? You have to beat them at some point.
We should mention they came back in February and worked the powers of pain, believe it or not, in a $50,000 ladder match. They were back again in March, this time with the powers of pain in a lumberjack street fight. They came back again in April. They're running it every month here. This time they're teaming with Steve Williams to take on Paul Jones and the Power of Pain. It's remarkable to me that they continue to come back every month. Even May, they're back again against Bobby Eaton and Stan Lane. But by the time they're here in July, there's only 6,500 fans here. And on top, they're doing Dusty and the Road Warriors against Flair, Arn, and Tully. And there's only 6,500 there. That had to be a disappointment.
Yep. To say the very least. So they didn't get a return match all around with Tully and Arn.
Not in Chicago, not in this building. No, sir. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. That's a little mystifying.
That was their
unless the idea is, and again, you got to go back and check every house show to see, did they have their return in another city?
Right, right, right.
I mean, they weren't given returns in every major city. They would have had one return match. And if it was in another major city, did it draw? Did it not? Have to ask those questions. And then if you get us away from them and they get other opponents, we get other opponents, then it doesn't hurt either team. Does that make sense?
Yeah. There's Truck and Tom Miller on the outside.
Truck and Tom Miller. Oh, now that was one of those bumps
you're
talking about. Tommy earned his money that night. That's concrete, fellas.
Yes, folks. It is.
And
there it
him
is.
Landed on it. Me landed on it feels the same. It sucks. So that was your DQ technically.
Yes. So the other referee is here. Looks like Hebner's here to back up Tommy. But Tommy not only took the bump on the outside, he also saw you go over the top rope and now a doomsday device. By the way, Meltzer said in the Observer that by now that move should have been banned already. He can't imagine anyone taking it. And of course, Arn did. And there it is. 1, 2, 3. And look in the background, look at the crowds going bananas.
Shit.
Yeah.
And I think the key to this whole thing is why you never got a sour thing in your mouth over this is the action continued on. Tommy went out, Tommy went down. You got another ref down there, but the action continued. You're not watching the referees. You're watching the action.
Right.
So now when he slides in and they have a double explanation, the pantomime's good by Earl. Hey, he went over the top, all that. You, as a fan back in the day, Conrad, if you had heels you really disliked and you really hated and you thought they were really rotten dipshits, to see a guy get his hand raised that's unconscious is about as much heat as you can get, isn't it?
It is. And here's the replay right here. Here you see the big bump from Tommy right out onto the concrete. That had to hurt. And then here you see Road Warrior Animal going to give the big backdrop to Arn Anderson, who's going to come crashing down to the outside, right as Hebner's getting there, bam, catches Hebner on the leg. But as you see, Tommy, he's pointing in right now. He saw it. So the watchful eye of Tommy Young means somehow, some way, the Horsemen steal a victory.
And if it, you know, if you went back the next week, hopefully, and reviewed this on TV to let everyone know exactly what happened there, to clear it all up, you know, then, and if we got some extra heat off of it, which I know we did because I remember that, you know, people looked at it, took a different slant looking at us. It worked for the overall game plan.
Let me ask you, when you think back about all the Starcades you participated in, obviously your first one had to be special. You would go on to have a lot of other Starcade events. Where does this one stack up for you as far as your all-time favorite Starcade moment or match or whatever?
You know what? It could be number one. And I'll just tell you why. I mean, it was, you look at everything, all the variables. We were hot. We were the champions. Road Warriors were red hot. You know, they were killers. It was their hometown. They were chasing. We were the champions. the time had probably come, you know, that the audience felt it was their time to have their moment in the sun. Everything kind of fell in place to just make a perfect setting for a big match at Starrcade. And I think this one maybe was as big as any of them and totally in our mind. I know we were wound up to have it for sure.
As a reminder, in 85, it was the Minnesota Wrecking Crew beating Wahoo and Billy Jack Haynes on the Omni. The next year in 86 at the Skywalkers event, it's the Rock and Roll Express beating the Minnesota Wrecking Crew in a steel cage match for the tag titles. We just saw 87, but famously, you're not there for 88. And I think we've talked about that a little bit here on the show before. Some of your hurt feelings and disappointment, and maybe frustration is a better word, with everything that was happening in Jim Crockett Promotions came from the payoff for the show we just watched, right?
Yes, sir. When it is brought to your attention in a private conversation with your boss, that this is what we want to pay you. And then, you know, you get your hopes up, because in those days that never happened. There were no guaranteed contracts by and large. You know, there was a few guys that had them, but mostly no one had a guaranteed contract. Certainly no one came to you and said in advance, not knowing what the buy rate of the house is going to be, what you're going to make. It was so out of the ordinary that I was willing to believe it, be gullible enough to just take it as verbatim. And then when it doesn't happen, man, it disappoints you.
Well, we hope we're not disappointing you. We hope you enjoyed Starrcade 1987. We've had a fun time breaking this show down. If you want to watch the whole thing, stay tuned. Later this week, you'll get to do it with myself and Jim Ross. We're going to have a big December together. Arn and I are December 1st. We're going to be covering TLC 2010. December 8th, of course, is hashtag Ask Arn Anything. On the 15th, it's TLC 2015. On the 22nd of December, it's hashtag Ask Arn Anything. And on the 29th, man, I'm pretty excited about this. It's the last ever Starrcade 2000. And as a special bonus, we're going to go ahead and break down Starrcade 1990 here on adfreeshows.com. I kind of thought Starrcade would never end, and unfortunately it did. The WWF tried to bring it back. It wasn't quite the same thing, but man, it sure was cool a few years ago when they did it. And I think when they finally returned, you managed to deliver a spine buster to Dolph Ziggler, right?
Well, and you know what? The audience that was there, they had a Starrcade Big Show feel to it. The audience was with it. Had there been, you know, the proper promotion, it made, you know, and made it a big deal, promoted it 2 months out, God knows what it could have been. But anyway, yeah, the audience was tremendous. I had a little thing with Dolph Ziggler and one of my favorite performers and Bobby Roode. And I was blessed and honored to be a part of their match. And it turned out to be something with a spine buster to Dolph that people, again, you know, they liked that. They liked that move, and they've been buzzing about it ever since. And I'm very honored and blessed to have that happen, and that the fans feel that way about it.
Well, and we're blessed to have you guys as supporters here on adfreeshows.com. We greatly appreciate all your support. It means a lot to me. It means a lot to Arn. It means a lot to our fans. We can't thank you enough. We hope you guys have a safe and happy holiday and enjoy Turkey Day. I'm looking forward to Christmas, and I'm looking forward to 2021. Hopefully 2021 is a little more back to normal, a little easier than 2020. We deserve a break, and we hope that we've been a fun escape for you this year here on adfreeshows.com. If you've got a question for us or some comments that you'd like to see addressed or different topics or shows you'd like to see, drop it in the comments or take us to Twitter. He is at the Arn Show. I am at Hey, it's Conrad, and we are out of time. We'll see you back in just a few days, real soon, right here on adfreeshows.com.